Without further ado, I'm going to say hello to the Honourable Dr. Jocelyn Scott AO. Good afternoon, Jocelyn.
Good afternoon, Ian. Lovely to speak with you.
I wanted to congratulate you on... You received an award recently for your lifelong successful work in the women's rights arena.
Yes, it was really wonderful to receive it. And a lawyer I know, Shamima Begum, who works in a solicitor's firm in London, nominated me for the award, and I was very fortunate to... To be honoured with the award.
Now, there's a few items that you wanted to discuss tonight, isn't there, Jocelyn?
Yes. I mean, one of the issues is that garden court chambers, operating in a completely impartial manner, approached the Secretary of the Department of Works and Pensions to propose the potential for a mediation between the government and the women who have been so sorely treated in relation to the change of the pension age, the 50s women. And they've rejected that proposition on the purported basis that the Ombudsman is dealing with the matter and therefore they can't enter into any negotiation. Well, of course, I really must say with respect that their proposition that they can't enter into negotiation or mediation is simply a way that it would appear to wiggle out of having to take responsibility. Because first of all, the Ombudsman is simply dealing with maladministration. The Ombudsman is not dealing with the issues of direct discrimination that exist in relation to what has happened to these 1950s born women. And secondly, by taking the approach it is, the government is adding to the extreme delay, because the Ombudsman has had this matter before him for some not inconsiderable time. And the longer that his delay goes on, then clearly the longer on the government's proposition, its delay goes on. And so it's simply compounding the problem that's being confronted and that really should be dealt with. The matter's been ongoing since, I think, about 2010. And therefore, it's now 2023, obviously, 13 years on. And really, the government must come to the table and this proposition that alternative dispute resolution, mediation, should be entered into is a sensible solution.
Yeah, that's right, yes. And there's some other items you wanted to mention as well, isn't there, Jocelyn?
Well, Ian, yes. Clearly, there is an issue of direct discrimination here. We've been through this before, but it doesn't seem going over it again, reiterating it. The point is that every time the Department of Works and Pensions calculates in relation to pensions for the women who were born in the 1950s. The women born in the 1950s are being directly discriminated against because they are being treated differently from everybody else who also is affected by the change in the pension age to 66. Men are affected because it's 1 year on from 65, or women are affected because it's 6 years on from 60. However, the particular impact for the 1950s born women is that they've borne the whole brunt of the change. All of them are not receiving whatever they are receiving on their birthday, which is the rule that applies to everybody else. Also, there's been differential treatment of them within that 50s group, because some women, for example, did receive the pension, say, 3 years after their birthday. Others have received it 5 years after their birthday, 3 years after their 60th birthday, I mean. So there's a differential impact in relation to the age question, and there's a sex and gender issue in relation to women versus men. Hmm. When the matter was before the courts under the judicial review, the court seemed to think that it was men who were being disadvantaged, but of course they weren't, because they'd been set at 65 since 1940, And that was not the issue here. They didn't have to rearrange their pensions or their working life at all. But the women who were born in the 1950s had to scrabble about to try to find some other work because they weren't going to get the pension at the age they had understood they would. Or they had to try on to hang on to the job they had. They had to rearrange their retirement plans and so forth. So it's clear that they have been discriminated against directly. It's direct discrimination, and there can be no question about that. And that must be recognised, and the government needs to recognise it. Of course, opposition party have to recognise it too, because they're going to be equally responsible. If this government doesn't address it, then the incoming government after the general election, whichever party it is, will have to address it.
Now, also, there's this statement about being out of time, the Supreme Court decision as well.
Well, that, of course, was a decision given without reasons. And really and truly, this is a matter that has to be looked at. If a claim or an action is going to be tossed out by the Supreme Court, particularly when it's been through the High Court, the Court of Appeal, with all the grounds, although being held against, every ground was advanced from the High Court to be considered by the Court of Appeal and by the Court of Appeal to be considered by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, in a one-judge decision, without reason, said the matter was out of time. Therefore, we haven't got a clue as to what this out-of-time proposition was based on. But if it was based on the fact that the Pensions Act change went through in 1995, that's irrelevant. What's relevant is that every time the Department of Works and Pensions calculates a pension in relation to one of the women from the 1950s cohort, that is a decision of the Department of Works and Pensions, whether it's done manually, whether it's done automatically. It's a decision. And therefore, that decision is not out of time. They're making decisions all the time as we speak. If it's been done automatically by a computer system, that computer system is working right now, making decisions for the Department of Work and Pensions. And that is a decision that is amenable to review. So with respect to the Supreme Court, bluntly, they did not consider what the issues were, and the out-of-time matter, in any event, had been knocked out even before the matter got to the High Court. It had been knocked out, and it was said that this matter was not out of time, and therefore it's an extraordinary decision of the Supreme Court. I should also add that though it was on a different point, it was about a matter relating to equal pay in the United States, the Lilly Ledbetter case. Now, the Supreme Court held that Lilly Ledbetter was out of time when she brought her claim for unequal pay because she didn't know that she'd been paid unequally to men who were in the same position, doing the same duties as she was doing, and she suddenly found out. Well, every time in that case that her pay was being calculated every week, every month, whenever it was paid, there was a decision being made by the relevant employer to pay her less than the men who were doing the same job as she. Now, the Supreme Court didn't recognise that. That took it right back to the beginning as to when she first started to be being paid unequally. And as the late Justice Barbara Ginsburg said, the majority of the Supreme Court simply got it wrong. And her dissenting decision pointed out quite clearly what I have just said to you, that every time the employer calculated Lilly Ledbetter's payment and her salary wrongly, that is, they calculated it as less than the men doing exactly the same job, that was a decision that was an unlawful decision. Barack Obama was the president at the time, and he introduced legislation that acknowledged that the way that the employer was calculating Lilly Ledbetter's salary, every month that it paid her less than the men doing the same job, that had to be rectified. Now, if the current government wants to say that the Supreme Court, in saying it was out of time, was correct, which it wasn't, then they can simply change the law. They've got the power to change the law and to say every time that the Department of Works and Pensions calculates the 1950s born women's pension, then it's discriminating and that has to be rectified. They've got the power to do that. But of course, they don't have to pass an act. It'd be good if they did. And show good faith on their part, but it'd show even better good faith if they came to the table and engaged in mediation.
Yeah, that's certainly right there, Jocelyn. Yes. Jocelyn, thank you so much for coming on and talking again about the issues, and hope to talk to you again real soon.
Right. And could I just make one last point?
Certainly,
Ian?
Yes.
Thank you. What's been said by some is simply to attempt to avoid the responsibility that they have in this matter, some in government and some in opposition or minor parties. Well, the Supreme Court has spoken and that's the end of it. But frankly, sometimes, you know, dissents in judgments win through in the end, because sometimes justice does prevail. And to say that somehow the Supreme Court is sacrosanct and that's the end of the matter ignores the fact that Parliament in the end has the power. So Parliament has the power to change this. Government has the power. Government has the power to change this. And ultimately, what government should be doing too is saying that when the Supreme Court makes a single judge decision in the way that was done now, at minimum, they have to provide reasons for doing so. Thanks so much for talking, Ian. Really good to talk with you.
Thank you, Jocelyn. And speak to you again very soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye then.